Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Learn to Love podcast, your guide to everything love, sex, intimacy, and relationships. Each week, your host, Zach Beach, interviews new experts on love, including couples therapists, relationship coaches, sex educators, and best-selling authors. Learn the best tips and cutting-edge wisdom to better love yourself, others, and the world. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show.
Hello, beautiful souls. I'm so positively delighted that you could join us on the Learn to Love podcast. I am your host, Zach Beach, and I'm excited to introduce our guest for today's episode, the incredible Alexandra Roxo. Alexandra is an artist, best-selling author, creative, transformational, and spiritual coach and mentor to women. She has been featured as a guest speaker on many renowned podcasts and on television, including on Vice TV's Slut Ever, Epic's Sex Life Show, and at numerous festivals and events worldwide. She has also been featured in The New York Times, Harper's Bazaar, Vogue, The Guardian, Playboy, InStyle magazine, and many other international publications for her work with women. Her book, Fuck Like a Goddess, Heal Yourself, Reclaim Your Voice, Stand in Your Power, debuted in July 2020 and was featured on Refinery29, Pop Sugar, Bustle, and InStyle, as a radical guidebook for women about modern spirituality outside the mainstream. She came onto the show to talk about her newest book, Dare to Feel, The Transformational Path of the Heart, and it was such a joy to have her on. So without further ado, let's start the show. Hello, Alexandra. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me here today.
So thanks so much for coming on. I'm so excited to speak with you. And I think I have to begin by asking the author of Dare to Feel, how are you feeling today, right now, this moment?
Thank you. You know, I feel really, really grateful that I just had a healthy baby 2 months ago and had a healthy pregnancy. And after going through such an ordeal as being pregnant and giving birth and surviving.
Yes, it's true.
Which I know it's not the 1800s. So, you know, I say that tongue in cheek. God bless anyone who has lost someone in childbirth. But just I say that in a way of surviving the experience of being pregnant, giving birth, the first few months of kind of not sleeping and having a baby. It's a lot. It's a lot. And I have so much gratitude and honor for all of our parents because they did that with us, unless they hired like a night nurse or something. Maybe that's a thing that some people do. But I mean, our parents were changing 8 diapers a day. That's a lot of love and devotion, you yeah. know? And then we spend so much time in our lives bitching about them and all this stuff, but like they did something really beautiful, you know? And, you know, again, not everybody has parents, not everybody grew up with their parents, not everybody was raised by their parents, et cetera. But I will say my parents, I have a lot more respect for them now. And they're laughing about, you know, yeah, all the sleepless nights and all of that. So I feel grateful. And, you know, I'm existing in a different realm these days because, yeah, I'm sleeping in a completely different way than I ever have in my life. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, first off, congratulations.
Thank you.
Your life into the world. And thank you for taking an hour with us today rather than, I'm sure, a much needed nap.
Totally.
And yeah, I totally agree with you that, you know, every human being comes into this world extraordinarily dependent on others to love them and take care of them. And even I feel like generations ago, people also had a lot more children. I know many parents with one two children, yeah. But like grandparents who had 7 or 8 children. So just a lot of people to take care of.
Yeah,
that's for sure. And I would love to hear some more of your thoughts about this idea of feeling.
Yeah. You know, though my book's called Dare to Feel, it's about a lot more than feeling. It's really about healing some of the heart wounds and revealing some of the heart wounds. And like in the revelation of my heart wounds, hoping that it helps you to reckon with yours, if there are still any of them that are still tingling or smarting or blocking love from entering into your world. So even though the title Dare to Feel, it is a really, like, it's a dare, you know, it's an invitation with boldness, but the book is also just like about the second part of the title too, which is the transformational path of the heart, which for me is really when we take a moment to study our heart. And I say that, and not in a physical heart, but in the spiritual heart and the emotional heart, the energetic heart. And that a lot of spirituality, we work with the mind, and we start with the mind, we study the mind, we quiet the mind. You know, the mind essentially is this entity in a way, if you will. Now, that being said, a lot of spirituality does acknowledge the heart and the heart base and tuning into the heart, etc. So it's both, right? Like, I remember when I was reading in the Gene Keys book by Richard Rudd, he says there's a particular sequence that he has. He has this kind of modality called the Gene Keys. And he says, you know, there's two paths to essentially enlightenment or awakening. There's the path of love and the path of meditation. And it's interesting because entering into a path of love is like essentially investigating all places in your being that are not love. That's all fearful thoughts, all doubts, all insecurities, all hidden traumas, wounds, etc. And that's very different than a path of stillness, and where instead of kind of like entering into the fires of your, let's say, karmic knots, you kind of quiet and witness them. So my spiritual path has been more of the one of like entering in. Okay, here's the thing that is obscured, let's say. Here's the obscuration of my loving. Let me just go into that fire. So this book is about people who are drawn to that kind of path and how to see that as a spiritual opportunity. And instead of trying to sort of be spiritually clean and, you know, tidy about life, but avoid kind of hopping into the places that hurt and dealing with them. Because a lot of, you know, daring to feel is the opposite of spiritual bypass, basically. It's the opposite of love and lighting your problems away. It's like, no, we're going to get into it here. You know, like, tell me what hurts. Let's dive into it together. The only way out is through. You can't breathe around it, etc. But there's not a path for everyone. So I would consider that more of a tantric spiritual path. I don't mean that in like a neo-tantric way or anything really to do with sexuality, but more with a spirituality that is really holistic, in a sense that it involves your whole life, your whole being, the darkness, the light. Everything is an opportunity for your awakening. Your fears are an opportunity. Your dreams are an opportunity. But it's very different than a path that is like, no, I'm going to cut out certain things or create and curate a lifestyle that is more, let's say, spiritually cleanly, clean, if that's the word, it's cleanly, spiritually clean. In a sense, it's like, this is the messy path, this heart path, if that makes sense, which makes it a deeper practice in a way, or a harder practice, maybe not deeper, let's say harder, which is all relative. It's all relative.
Wow, I love so much of what you're saying, and I absolutely agree with you on so many of your points. I'll just reiterate some of them, which is that we can't love and light our problems away, which I love that phrase, because I do meet so many people and they have so much resistance to this phrase, you know, like, oh, we're all just love and light, because there's that implication of the avoidance of the spiritual bypassing that you mentioned. You're like, actually, I feel really crappy sometimes. Like, can we acknowledge this also on this path? And I love your emphasis that our spirituality is holistic. It works on the whole of our being, the positive, the negative, the good and the bad, and those feelings that we want to avoid at all costs. I also love your distinction that we have this physical heart, and you're talking not just about that, but the spiritual, energetic, and emotional heart. And I'd love to just hear a little bit more about almost where you place feelings and the heart in the general realm of the human experience. Because I think there's like a sort of intuitive division we might create in being human, like we have our body, which is the home of sensations. We have the heart, which is perhaps the home of feelings. And then we have the mind, which is the realm of thoughts. And do you resonate with this like division and we're focusing on this layer? Or do you like, actually, we got to integrate it all? And do you feel that feeling is this level of the heart and the level of almost what some people refer to as the limbic system?
It's a great question. And I think that it can help us as humans. We like to like figure things out. Oh my gosh, my partner is outside just showing our daughter flowers. It's very I was like, have fun with her. He's showing her the flowers that are in bloom in the yard. They're pink and they're red. It's really epic. And
normally I'd edit that out, but we got to leave it in because
please leave it in.
Here we are. We're talking about enjoying life and it's like, there's flowers outside. That's all we need.
Yeah. And they're pink and red. They're really, really beautiful. They're camellias. And they're, when we rented our house, we didn't know that there were going to be bushes that were all going to be in bloom outside of our bedroom window. And I knew after I gave birth, I'd be laying in bed for a while. So I chose the room for us in the house that wasn't quote unquote the master bedroom, but that had the best view of the sky and the trees and this gorgeous live oak. I didn't know that there would also be this show of red and pink camellia flowers coming in there. And that, you know, that is also like, that is such a huge part of life and practice is engaging with what's around us in a way of that, that expression, that divine Shakti, if you will, of a color, right? Like that is part of the passion, which is the emotion in a sense. When I think about the elements, I think about that. Anyway, okay, back to the, you know, quantification and sort of compartmentalization of our being. we exist in like the thoughts and the sensations and feelings. I think that it helps us to understand ourselves, but I think that the more kind of spiritually deep you become, you see that it's not that black or white, that our mind is not just our mind, our heart is not just our heart. But I do think it can help us when we're understanding ourselves to feel the difference. You could say that there's like an overall mind that's a higher mind in a way or a bigger mind that is a part of us. And then there's more of the sort of conditioned mind that is full of the beliefs and the narratives that have been kind of put into that bank for a long time that cause closure or that cause constriction. And, but that there's still like a greater mind of our whole being holding us. You could say that. I like to think of more of like a soul, that we have a soul that is that kind of omniscient, eternal aspect of our being, and that our thoughts are more transient, are more conditioned. And that a lot of our emotions are also conditioned and also transient, but that they are a language that helps us understand our loving and our potentiality towards living with love at the core of our being. So, you know, yeah, it's a complicated question. I think I would have to ask like a master. And I'm by no means a master of kind of like, you know, is my mind my heart? Is my heart my mind? You know, where do my thoughts and my emotions come together? My thoughts can create an emotional experience, of course, and they do all the time. But could I use my emotions to open instead of use my thoughts to open, right? Because a lot of people try to think their way into healing or openness. Could I use my emotions as the paintbrush, as the massage of my heart to create an openness that I haven't experienced before? That's part of the path that I walk and that I teach. It's like, let's enter in that gateway or that doorway. But there are so many doorways, right, to opening or awakening or healing. The other piece that I was going to address, the limbic. So, you know, that's a great question. It's like, does the nervous system, is that, I wouldn't call that the heart, but I would call it again, like a byproduct of experience that our nervous system is programmed or exists in a certain way because of the life that we have had. When I think of this eternal spiritual heart that where there's a ground of unconditional love that we can potentially mine into with time, I think that's very different than the nervous system. I think of the nervous system much more sort of practically, and that it holds our trauma, our fear, the way we were brought up. It holds so much of our conditioning, but in the embodied sense of it, not in the intellectual or cerebral sense of our conditioning. That's a good, hard question. Thank you.
Well, we ask the hard questions on this podcast, but you are so good at answering them. I just love your way with words. I remembered you're also a poet, and how each chapter I think closes with a little poem of yours.
It does, and yeah.
So I love, just going to repeat a few of these things because the verbiage is so powerful, that our soul is the omniscient, eternal aspect of our being. Emotions are a language that helps us understand our potentiality in living with love. We can use our emotions to massage open the heart. Such wonderful imagery. And we do have this eternal spiritual heart with a ground of unconditional love. Those words just warm my heart. And
well, I was going to say, can I hire you to like make me some social media content with that? Thank you.
Yeah, we could clip those out. We should just make a little montage. So I want to go back to something you said at the very beginning, because it does tap into this idea of the heart, because you did say that part of our path is both healing and revealing our heart wounds. And I feel like we've talked a lot about childhood wounds on the show, because we've had some episodes on attachment theory and trauma and different things like this. But I'm not sure if you've ever used this term heart wounds. So what are some examples of heart wounds to you, and how do we go about becoming aware of them?
A major one is rejection. So actually, if people don't know the Gene Keys, have a look, but there's this beautiful aspect of the Gene Keys called the Venus sequence, which is like how your heart opens and closes, almost like astrology, but for the heart. It's really cool. Anyway, one of the wounds that Richard Rudd points to there is the wound of rejection. And so I'm crediting him because he kind of puts it in this beautiful sequence that has inspired me. But rejection is something that closes the heart or hardens the heart. Also, denial is a heart wound. When you deny yourself love, you deny yourself being loved, you withhold love, denial. Any moment in life where, let's say, you wanted to love, but you didn't and you held back, creates a wound of denial. Repression. Repression is another wound. These can exist, I think, in any of our energetic centers or our chakras or whatever you want to call it. Guilt. You know, I did something wrong in loving once, and now the guilt weighs upon my heart like a blanket, and I can't love because I feel guilty because last time I loved someone, I cheated on them or whatever, right? So shame. These are universal wounds. But when I think of, let's say, and these are some of the ones that I mentioned from the Gene Keys, but when I think about these universal wounds, like repression, guilt, denial, shame, what else? Alienation. Like there are things that like would prevent you from giving and receiving love. Rejection has been one of my big ones this life, is feeling rejected. And what happens when we feel rejected, we close our hearts. We can't receive as much love. Our hearts can become cold or hardened. And yeah, the same goes for any of those other ones. Like when we deny ourselves love, it's not like we can give love from that place. And some of these wounds, I like speaking of it as wounds instead of trauma, because it puts it in a bit more of a spiritual context versus a psychological context. And when I think of it like that, I think of it as a core wound, as something that is a part of my spiritual makeup this life, a part of the experience that my incarnation is moving through, versus going, the human Alexandra had this trauma, right? That I went through, physical trauma, psychological trauma, etc. So that's a choice that I'm making as a writer and a teacher. But when I think about those wounds or the core wounds of the heart, it's like they could be little things. They can be little things like growing up, you know, I always tried to hug my brother, but each time he would push me away. But little by little, like you start repressing your, let's say, desire to give your love, right? And by the time you're on 25, like you don't love like that anymore. You don't give that way. You play it safe. You play it cool. You've hardened, whatever. So it doesn't have to be some big trauma that you've experienced in order to have closures around your loving and around your heart. But some of them can be quite large as well. And so in the book, I talk about some of mine in the hopes of inspiring you to consider yours, because I honestly haven't met that many people that are just an emanation of love, and that just love without withholding, that's in a way that's not overgiving or that's not compulsive, or right. There's like the, there's a shadow of too much loving and too much giving and all of that. That's not what I'm talking about. And then there's the shadow of withholding. There's a place somewhere that exists. I like to think of it as like where the Saint Ananda Mahima may have existed, or Amma, another two Indian women hugging saints. I like to think of it as a place of maybe Mother Mary or Mary Magdalene. I think of these female saints of a place of embodying an open heart, an unconditional love without shadow frequencies coming through, without anything else but that love, no non-love. And that's what I aspire to in my loving and in my embodiment.
So I love that so much. We can aspire to embody an open heart without the shadow frequencies coming through. And I feel like we have a really nice case study that I want to ask you about, because you mentioned these core heart wounds of rejection, denial, repression, guilt. And one that's coming up for me is that rejection piece. And I'm sure you've probably experienced this as a writer, is that you get rejected often. You submit articles and people say no. You submit book proposals and people say no. So we can get rejected in all sorts of areas of our life, not just when we ask somebody out on a date and they say, you know, never in a million years. But we have little micro rejections in our life as well as the big ones. And I would say that's a very, you know, painful feeling, or very painful feelings can arise with rejection. Feelings of shame, not good enough, unworthy. And there would be a huge, I imagine, temptation to want to avoid those feelings of pain, right? So what would the daring to feel approach be when we do encounter those painful feelings of rejection, especially because as human beings, we want connection and belonging?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I gotta say, it's pretty simple. It's we can't avoid it. If it's here, if it's entering into our life, to me, it's an opportunity. And to let that rejection pain, right? It's not that, it's what's the feeling that comes from rejection? Is it anger? Is it sadness? To let feeling that open you. So say you sit at the computer, you're so excited. The Yale Review is going to potentially publish your poem. And you know, you've been waiting for this moment. You open the email and it's like, you were not, thank you so much, but we chose not to use your piece at this time. Please submit again in the future. And you're sitting there and it's like noticing what's coming forward. Is it sadness? Is it anger? Before your mind goes into blame and, oh, I should have done it better. I know I should have submitted the other poem. There were three poems. I should have submitted the other one. Or this is all because, you know, I didn't take that poetry class last year. Before your mind goes into its stories about the thing or the blame, this is because I hired the wrong writing coach, you know, and they advised me wrong. Right? Before your mind goes into any potential narratives, it's to stop, to breathe, and to feel. What's there? Is it anger? Is it sadness? Can you be with that without the stories? Can you feel your heart through that so that that sadness or anger actually opens your heart? And that's a practice. Maybe you just sit and actually feel and make some sound. Maybe you put on a song and you feel with the song. Maybe you get in your tub and you cry and you feel that sadness. A lot of people skip that step and they go straight into all the stories in the mind. And then those stories just keep running, and they keep running from what's underneath the stories, which is, I feel so sad that I am not good enough. Like, right? And the story is, I'm not good enough, but what's under that? And it seems so simple. As I'm saying this aloud, I'm like, this is the simplest thing in the world, but it's also not, you know. The difference is keeping our heart open, and we can feel that difference by, if we go into blame, if we go into self-shaming or blaming someone else, then the heart starts to close. If we can keep the heart open through the feelings of sadness and anger, through the moment of rejection, then we are doing a deep practice.
I love that. Going into blame, the heart starts to close. Actually, especially it can apply to intimate relationships, right? As soon as you're ready to blame the person, guess what? Your heart is closing. But I really love that distinction between the actual feeling and like the thoughts that do arise. Because that's exactly what I was like. What about the feeling of not being good enough and no one's going to love you? You're like, those are great thoughts, Zach. How about what you're actually feeling? I'd love to continue this idea of this temptation to think that we are feeling like too much or that our emotions are controlling our life. So like, what if I do feel anger and then I have a desire to act out my anger and I'm starting to yell and throw things and punch pillows and different things like that. But I'm also thinking about other emotions. Like we have this phrase, don't cry over spilled milk. Should I still dare to feel if perhaps my emotional response, like crying over spilled milk or something, seems out of proportion to the situation?
Yeah, it's a great question. What I like to remind people is that collectively, especially in the Western world, especially in the white Western world, there is a real deep wound of repression and denial that comes from like the people that colonized the place that a lot of us live on, the land. They were not coming over as emotionally expressed people that accepted themselves in a deep way. The religious background that founded the United States and the political even background is not an emotionally friendly place. It's not a heart friendly place. So if you look back into our ancestral coding and into our DNA, most of us carry the wound of repression and denial of our emotional experience. That being said, I'm half Latin roots, so I'm half Spain and Portugal roots. Also, crazy war people, colonizers. However, there was a lot more expression of emotion that stayed within those Catholic Latin countries. It's very interesting culturally. I'm not a sociologist. I'm not an anthropologist. I'm not a historian, but I like to understand why, right? So why does it seem dramatic to us or over the top to cry over the milk spilling? Why can't I cry over the fact that I spent fucking $6 at Whole Foods on this milk and it's on the floor? I say that as a joke, but you know what I mean. We have an internal compass as to what is quote unquote civilized and okay to cry about. And this compass has been set by a whole bunch of codes of behavior that are very archaic and that were created likely by the church and by a political and a sociological system of repressed people, right? So that may not be the case for everyone listening, which is awesome. I come from a half Brazilian, background, and my dad's Brazilian. So my Brazilian family, if you were to sit at a dinner with them and you didn't speak Portuguese and you heard them talking, you would hear them being, eu não sei que você tá falando, vai para lá. No, eu adoro aquele filme. No, você não gosta. And you would think they're fighting with each other, but they're speaking passionately, right? We in America, all I said was, I didn't like that film. Oh, I loved that film, right? So it's like the intonation and the emotion of a culture, they vary drastic, right? So I'm telling you this to put a context because nothing exists out of context. So if you get an email being rejected from something and the context is, oh, I'm a cool millennial. We're cool. We kind of keep it chill. We grew up on indie rock and Full House. And there's a completely different context than someone else in another country who is, let's say, sings around a fire or learns a traditional dance or is a part of a passionate, alive, emotional culture, right? We can't have this conversation without that context. So what I would say is for a lot of people, to give them space to feel big emotions and feelings and to feel passionate experience of life is a deep healing all the way back to our ancestors. all the way back to all the men potentially in your lineage who were buttoned up and like said cheerio and, you know, sat around the table. Where are your people from? Just curious.
My ancestry, if you're specifically me, my ancestry is Swedish, English, and German.
Great. A lot of real, you know, hard, you know, hard and cold folks. Sorry. I mean, maybe they're not all that. I'm making a huge generalization, people. So please, please know that I'm half joking. But I mean, Germans aren't known for being the same as Brazilians, right? Like, so there's a huge context in that regard to how somebody feels, right? My partner comes from Swiss and German background. And, you know, it's very different than me and what I grew up with half of my childhood in Brazil. So I'm saying this because a lot of people are judging their emotional expression or their relationship to life through an old lens. So if you are an aware human, and here's the secret sauce is awareness. If you decide to punch your pillow or to break a plate, but you're completely unaware that your tiny daughter is in the next room, and that she's going to be really scared hearing that sound, that's not okay. You're lacking awareness. The behavior is toxic. If you are a person who has awareness and you're like, oh, my daughter's in the next room, but I would like to express this anger in a way that is, you know, big, I'm going to go out to the garage and I'm going to punch the punching bag that I have, or I'm going to like put on Metallica and, like, you know, I don't know, rip up some of the recycling, you know, then I'm being aware. I'm bringing my awareness to the fact that I have emotion. I'm not trying to sort of polite my emotion away or pray my emotion away. I am pouring it into a moment in my life. And so there's a difference in terms of letting emotions take over. An emotional spirit experience take over, creating a mega reactivity without awareness, which is unconscious, which is a lot of our society lives like that. It's like literally you're driving on the highway, someone cuts you off and you go, fuck you, and you get flipping the finger. That's called complete unconscious reactivity. Good job, right? We've all done that. But like a conscious moment of that would be like, wow, I feel like I really want to flip that person off and I'm really angry. I'm not going to do it. But when I get out of my car, I'm going to like go, ah, because I feel there's a charge in my body that I need to discharge. And if I don't release this charge, I'm probably going to let it out unconsciously onto someone else. So there's a practice involved. This is a practice, this living within a practice of this. It's not black or white. It's not like, cool, I get to let my emotions just run my life. Or no, I need to be really clean and like breathe through it and not have the big feelings. It's how do I let this become artful and beautiful? And then it becomes even more nuanced when you bring it into relationship and intimacy as something that can open the moment and open both people's hearts. Then it becomes, ooh, this is actually fun. I'm mad at my partner right now and I could be reactive and blaming, or I could really make some sort of a sound of, and then he may laugh at me and go, oh my gosh, you look so cute. And I go, rah! And then the moment has now opened into something beautiful because of my expression. Instead of going, I'm mad at you. You really hurt my feelings when you did that, right? Like instead of that, or, you know, similarly, you could do the same thing with sadness. Like your partner's like, oh, I'm not coming home till Sunday from my work trip. And you're, oh, I'm going to miss you so much. Instead of going, well, you said you were going to be home on Friday and I already made us plans. Oh, you did this, you know? So there are very artful ways to use our emotions that actually open deeper intimacy versus close it down. Mm. Does that make sense, or am I going too far, too deep?
No, absolutely. It makes a whole lot of sense. The metaphor and idea of spaciousness is what comes to mind. Earlier, you said we want to give people the space to feel all the emotions of life. And I'm almost just imagining like a bowl in like a china shop. Like, yeah, if that bowl gets out its anger, it's going to break a lot of things. But if you give it a spacious field, then it can do whatever it wants. So it's true. If we are forced to kind of funnel, like, you know, say our anger or sadness or emotions like at our partner, going to cause conflict and disconnection. But we can give ourselves space for emotions to run through. We can give our partner space for them to express their emotions and have that awareness. And when I hear word awareness, I do think of a very spacious level of attention rather than one of focusing and concentration. And I also agree with you that I do think we live in a very emotionally repressed culture. I remember when I was in Bali, Indonesia, which in my mind has a very happy populace. And I was just talking to a guy there and I was like, how are you? He's like, oh, I'm a little sad. My mother's been sick for 2 weeks. And I was like, you're supposed to say fine. Right. You know, like we have our social scripts here. Where, you know, no matter what somebody says, like to how are you, you got to say fine or not bad. Right? Those are your two options. And I was like, here somebody is expressing himself. That's so interesting. And I was like, when you have that freedom and space to express yourself, it is a source of, you know, greater love and happiness. And you brought up colonialization. So I do feel like we have to talk about patriarchy a little bit, because there's two things to talk about. One is the cultural stereotypes we have that women are the emotional ones and men are the logical ones. And one way that stems in patriarchy is men in power telling women they need to be more logical. And in this, how do you approach this, we'll say, binary and stereotype that divides our logic and emotions across genders?
That's a great question. I still think there's a lot of healing that needs to happen there. When I think about the amount of tears that I've seen, let's say some of the men in my life cry, they're nothing compared to the amount of tears that they've probably seen me cry, which reminds me that there's just still distance to go, right? I'm not saying that every dude needs to cry as much as me, by the way.
Saying men still have a lot of healing to do around feeling their emotions.
Well, it's both of us, right? Because we exist together. It's a responsibility, I think, for all of us together to heal whatever that wound is. That is like, men aren't allowed to feel as much. And I do personally believe that there are some archetypal qualities that men embody differently than women. Let's say men who identify as a more masculine being, not just men in general. Let's say like someone who identifies more masculinely and you know, it's such a big, deep conversation, but I think there are some qualities that are feminine and some that are masculine that we all have, right? Like, so that's regardless of gender, regardless of sex. And then there's all the conditioning around it. It's a really big, complicated question. I'm trying to think how best to answer this.
Well, part of my follow-up was that your book is written for women.
Well, no, not necessarily. My first book feels more for women, but this one, I don't think there's some poems that are about women. But in my first book, I talk like a lot about to be a woman who this or a woman who this. But in this book, I don't say that. Like, I'm not like, they're just like two or three poems that say like to be a woman who doesn't pretend or my kind of woman. But this all can apply to anyone. And it's like identifying the shadows in your feeling, the shadows in your loving, the addictions, the childhood wounds, all of that kind of thing that's universal. And there's a long way to go in terms of that divide that you mentioned of that sort of logical overlay onto men that doesn't allow space for their emotions and vice versa. But I do think that that same overlay has been laid upon women. Of like your logic is more important than your emotions, because that is part of that kind of patriarchal doctrine or conditioning that we all received. I think that it means that there's usually just as much healing for the women in terms of allowing space for emotions, but we have more of a social okay to have them. Right. But it doesn't mean that as a woman, I could walk through the grocery store crying and that it would be just socially acceptable. It's not like you'd be like, oh God, that woman's crying. Is she okay? Because women or men, all of us were given the same social codes about it's not okay to be angry in public or to cry in public. I would say that that is culturally much more specific to white people. I could be mega wrong. And if I'm wrong, I'm sorry. But I would say that growing up in a Brazilian culture, I've seen a lot of people yelling at each other on the street. And my dad yells a lot. So to me, that was really abrasive as a child because I grew up in Georgia and like everybody was very Protestant, Christian, middle class, you know. And then my dad came from such a different culture where people were more passionate. People yelled more. People were like more like, don't do that. Get in the car. And I'm like, oh my God, you're abusing me, you know. And so this also, again, it's like there is taking that into consideration always in terms of men, women. Like the cultural background, the socioeconomic background. But I do think that that wound, and I'm sort of very circuitously answering this question, but I do think that that wound about if it's okay for us to have emotions and emotional expression exists for everyone. Women just have a different relationship to it. We are allowed to have the emotions more in private with our family, with our intimate partners, and that standard doesn't exist as much for men. But in terms of as a society, it's still not acceptable for us to have emotions together unless we're in a movie theater, a football game, right? Men can have emotions at a football game, and it's this collective code. We're allowed to all scream and yell, right? People can laugh at the same time in a movie theater. So there are these really specific places that it's okay to feel in public, right? Or as a collective. The rest has to happen behind closed doors. So I think that wound is for everybody, you know?
Yeah, absolutely agree. It kind of circles back to something you mentioned at the very beginning of the show, that a lot of our spirituality is about the mind, about calming the mind, cultivating mindfulness. And we see the emphasis on the mind, on thought, on thinking all around us, and this emphasis on logic over something like intuition. And this affects us all in the same way, where none of us are in touch with our hearts and our feelings and our emotions. And our path to get there will be as unique as we are. And there are, at the same time, there are gendered messages that we need to get past. So as we're winding down, before I get to my final question, I ask all of my guests, let's circle back to this little love piece. And I'll just open it up. How does getting in touch with our feelings, daring to feel, giving ourselves space, how does this path improve our loving, romantic, intimate relationships?
Well, it's everything for them, in my opinion. If our heart is not open and we can't feel our hearts and we can't feel what we're feeling in real time, then we don't understand the language of intimacy, because the language of intimacy and connection is the language of feeling. Can I feel you? Can I feel myself? What am I feeling in this moment? Is that running through my whole body like a beautiful current of either sadness, pain, ecstasy, excitement? Or am I in my head? Am I thinking? Am I fearing? Am I worrying? Imagine making love and, you know, all the circumstances and conditions are perfect. It's like, it's the perfect day. It's the perfect room. It's the perfect music. It's the perfect lover. But there you are. And you're just worried about this one little thing that you've said at dinner. And all through the lovemaking, you're just so fixated in your mind about, oh God, I think I shouldn't have said this, blah, 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 blah. So you're not feeling the moment at all. You're not in your body at all with that. And so feeling would be the thing that would bring you into that moment. You would go, oh, my love, everything is perfect, but I am just so scared. I feel so scared that I said the wrong thing at dinner. And that would bring intimacy and feeling into that moment, which would create connection. So when we try to cut out uncomfortable feelings, we actually rob ourselves of potential moments of deep intimacy. And so love is based on that. Love is not a cerebral thing. You know, there are obviously a lot of neurological components and a lot of hormonal components to love, which is great. I've experienced so much oxytocin over the last few months bonding with my daughter. It's incredible. I don't need drugs, you know, probably for many years. But there's also just the deep potential of emotion as the opener of the heart to love. And it's us being honest about what's happening in our bodies in any given moment. Instead of going into embarrassment or shame or guilt, etc., staying outside of the wound and trying to be with the feeling. So love is going to constantly ask you to look at what's not love in the moment, in your heart, whether you do it or not. That's your practice if you choose to. Intimacy is going to provide you so many opportunities to look at where you hide from it, where you beg for it, where you turn away from it. And all of those moments are, if you stop and feel, you can notice like what's there again. And that feeling can make a bridge between you and an incredible moment of your life. Or you deny the feeling, you avoid the feeling, you sink into the feeling and you let it take you, you know, like a tornado or something, and it whips you outside of the moment. And all of that can just close the moment down and close the intimacy down. So feeling emotion in the moment is the thing that creates the intimacy that most of us long for.
Absolutely. I love your language and I love your choice of words. And I love this metaphor that you are using, that the language of intimacy is the language of feeling. And just this idea of language, it's so powerful because first of all, you have to become fluent, right? In order to speak the language, which can take much practice. But then once you and your partner are speaking the same language, like that's where connection is going to happen. So I do have to finish by asking you the question I ask all of my guests, which is, what do you wish everyone knew about love?
Wow. That it's possible for everyone in a variety of ways, for any heart that's been hurt, for any heart that feels numb or hardened or closed or too broken or too messed up or too old, or not enough, that love is possible for even that heart. And it's not only possible, but it's already existing underneath all of the wounds, all of the fears, all of the closures, and that it is a worthy life practice to not give up on it.
Amazing. It's like spoken word. Thank you, Alexandra Roxo. My heart is so warm after our conversation. Thank you for this new book of yours, Dare to Feel, The Transformational Path of the Heart. And for our listeners who want to learn more about you, how can they find you?
You can find me at alexandraroxo.com, my website. I'm also at Instagram at alexandraroxo. And I've got all kinds of different programs that I run. I do one-on-one coaching and mentorship. I have women's practice space that I run. I do retreats, so it's all on my website. And yeah, I look forward to people reading the book, sharing about it. Please tag me on anything on Instagram. I love to hear what stood out for you or what spoke to your heart.
Wonderful. Thanks again, Alexandra. I'm feeling so good, and I'm sure our listeners are feeling quite full from this interview. And now I set you free to say hello to your new life in the world.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me and for your great questions.
Thank you. Wow. What an incredible interview. Alexandra had so much to share about this thing we call love. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you remember all the valuable lessons from today, including our task is to study the heart, the spiritual, energetic, and emotional heart. Our path is to investigate all the places in our being that are not love. Daring to feel is the opposite of spiritual bypassing. We cannot love and light all of our problems away. Spirituality is holistic in that it involves our whole being, the positive and the negative. Our soul is the omniscient, eternal aspect of our being. Emotions are a language that helps us understand our potentiality in living with love. We can use our emotions to massage the opening of the heart. Going into blame, the heart starts to close for ourselves and others. So we can give ourselves and others the space to feel all the emotions of life. Because the language of intimacy is the language of feeling. Which brings us to deeper connection. So it's time to become fluent. Thanks so much again for listening. Remember, you are perfect just the way you are. You are lovable, loving, and loved.
Thanks again for listening to the Learn to Love podcast. To learn more about the show and your host, head over to zachbeach.com or theheartcenter.com. You can also follow Zach on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.